Hey, good afternoon, Juno. Pat Moore hosting today on Juno Afternoon. I've got an incredible lineup of guests. The folks from New York Polyphony are here right in the studio with me, and they'll be talking with us in about 5 minutes. We're going to look into the business of recycling, particularly with a bunch of websites around town that help you to find out how to get rid of things that you want to get rid of without putting them in the landfill. NAMI's Family to Family Education Program will be highlighted, and the folks from the Thunder Mountain High School production of Arsenic and Old Lace will be in here to tell us about that upcoming play. The weather, well, it's really been incredible, but Wednesday it's supposed to probably be patchy fog in the morning, and then Wednesday night it's going to start raining again. We got a chance of rain on Thursday, chance of rain on Friday. Well, okay. However, it looks like we might be able to look at rain this weekend. Oh, yes, indeed.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Tristan Ottone, sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. A rally in Duluth, Minnesota Monday brought Native American community members out to protest the alleged assault of a Native man, Anthony Jackson, by Duluth police officer Richard Jopy. Jopy has been charged with fifth-degree assault and disorderly conduct in the September 21st incident, and reports indicate that it's the fifth complaint filed against the officer in the last 2 years. Ricky Defoe is co-chair of the Duluth American Indian Commission. He says the video shows that felony assault charges should be leveled at the officer instead of fifth-degree charges due to Jackson's physical situation.
The man lives in a supportive housing unit called San Marcos, which is not a vulnerable adult within there, but once you step inside a facility such as the Duluth Detox, then you become a vulnerable adult. He's wheelchair-bound, his right eye has been removed because of a gunshot wound in the past, and he was intoxicated at that time.
The surveillance video from the Duluth Detoxification Center appears to show Anthony Jackson drunk and in a wheelchair. As Jackson tries to remove his jacket, Officer Jopy puts him in an arm lock, and Jackson appears to take a swipe at Officer Jopy's face. In the video, Officer Jopy responds by punching Jackson in the face 5 times, knocking him out of his wheelchair and onto the floor. The video also shows medical staff attempting to intervene, at which point Officer Jopy threatens the staff member with arrest. Again, Ricky Defoe.
We just need that independent investigation to be completed, the internal investigation to be completed, the discipline to be handed out, and then once that's completed, then they can take it to the next level.
A spokesperson for Mr. Jopy was unavailable for comment. A public school district on the Wind River Indian Reservation in Wyoming is working to incorporate more of the Northern Arapaho language into the school day. Wyoming Public Radio's Rebecca Martinez reports.
For decades, the tribe has been working to preserve the language by teaching Arapaho classes a few times a week in public schools on the reservation, but those children rarely reach fluency. There are a couple Arapaho immersion preschools on the reservation, and when the kids leave, those 5-year-olds are fluent for a while, but they eventually lose it because their elementary school teachers and classmates speak English, and their parents were never taught Arapaho as children. Now, Fremont School District 38 is developing a class that teaches children Arapaho using the total Physical Response Method, or TPR. Arapaho elders meet with students at Arapaho Charter High School daily to give them commands in their native language. Students repeat the commands and carry out the actions. Some language experts criticize TPR as a language preservation tool because a student can't become fluent in a language just by learning commands. But Arapaho historian and language advocate Eugene Ridgely Jr., better known as Snowball, says the TPR students will also learn Arapaho greetings, songs, etc. He says it's better than nothing.
They'll become conversational as far as fluent. It would have to take some special program, like maybe a master-apprentice program, to accomplish that.
Fremont School District 38 will expand the program into the elementary school in January. For National Native News, I'm Rebecca Martinez.
Today is the voter registration deadline for a number of states, including those with large Native populations like Arizona, Colorado, Florida, Michigan, Montana, New Mexico, Utah, and Washington, D.C. Native vote advocates are pushing for increased voter registration in Indian country, and some analysts predict that the Native vote could have major impacts on tight Senate races. Voter registration for Oklahoma and North Carolina ends Friday. On this day in 1987, Seminole Chief James E. Billy was acquitted of state charges for killing an endangered panther. Billy killed, skinned, and ate the panther in Florida nearly 4 years earlier. He argued religious freedom and treaty rights. This is National Native News. I'm Tristan Ottone.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. Funding comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation. And by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's just coming up on 6 minutes after four. You're in tune with KTOO News. This is Juno Afternoon. Well, it's not quite Christmas, but we're receiving a Christmas present this week for absolute certain, because here in town is a group that you're listening to in the background. Those four blended voices belong to New York Polyphony. They are Jeffrey Williams, the countertenor, Stephen Wilson, the tenor, Christopher Herbert, the baritone, and Craig Phillips, the bass, and they are performing tonight at the Jack, and they are here in the studio with me even as we speak. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hey. Good to see you.
So, we were all surprised by the selection of music. We had actually carefully picked another piece, and thanks to my clumsy fingers, I think, we didn't get that. But anyway, welcome to Juno.
Thank you.
Y'all been in town, what, most of today? A couple of days?
We arrived last night on Alaska Airlines.
Okay. Did you get around a little bit?
We've had some time today to explore the town a bit. And
we got to go see the glacier today. It was incredible.
Well, I think we're the only city in the United States, maybe, that has a glacier inside its city limits. So, we are the largest capital in the United States. I don't know if you know.
We heard that.
In land area, that's actually true. So,
and also the only capital not accessible by land.
Or anything else other than sea or air. So, yeah.
And perhaps the most beautiful capital as well.
I'm not sure that. There's a guy coming to town, I think, today or tomorrow, or maybe he's already in town, who's doing 50 capitals in 50 days.
Yeah.
I saw it in the paper this morning. So I'm assuming that he'll have something to say about Juno when he's done with all this. But, yes, we do get some beautiful things here. It's like living in a picture postcard. So you guys have been together for a while. I think Jeff, Chris, and Craig, you guys were all in the original group, right?
Actually, Chris replaced our founding baritone about 2 years ago.
Okay.
So Jeffrey and I are the last remaining founding members.
So you said this started in a church in New York?
Yes, we were all kind of in the New York scene. This was Cast Your Minds Back 6 years. It's been 6 years.
The speaker, by the way, is Craig Phillips.
Yes. We were all singing at a church called St. Mary the Virgin in Times Square. And we, in passing, kept saying, hey, we should really get together and do something. We were all lovers of early music. But it never happened until a producer friend of Jeffrey contacted him, wanted to put together a group of singers for a program for Public Radio International. And we were lucky enough to get called by Jeffrey. So we got together and we recorded a few Christmas tracks. Actually, it's good that you did play that, because that was one of the Christmas tracks that we recorded. We got to the end of that recording process, listened to the CD, and went, hey, that's pretty good. We should maybe consider doing this more often. And our producer thought the same thing and took the CD to a label based in London and asked them if they'd like us to finish the disc. And that became our first CD. So we kind of had a CD deal, record deal before we were really a group. And that was a big cart before the horse. But here we are 6 years later. So
My next question, I think, comes out of a sense of ignorance. But are there a large number of groups that sing the things that you do?
There are a lot of groups. I don't think there are many in the states.
This is Jeff Williams, the countertenor.
There are many in the states that are like us, but not exactly. There are groups like Chanticleer, which is an all-male vocal ensemble, but they're really a 12-voice choir. And there are a lot of other smaller choirs. Of course, Great Britain has a lot of groups. The Hilliard Ensemble, for example, are perhaps our closest model. But we feel we're pretty much the only male classical vocal quartet in the States doing what we do. And, of course, we specialize in early music, and so that gives us a special, unique flavor.
Are the voices that, in other words, is a men's four-person choir like this, do you require these four voices, or?
No, we just happen to be the guys who were here, actually. I'm a countertenor. We had a tenor, a baritone, and a bass, and we've spent especially the first 5 years, finding repertoire that was as suitable for our voices without too much manipulation. So as opposed to a group like Chanticleer, which has real male sopranos, I'm not a soprano. I'm a rather low alto. So our sound by nature is fairly low set. It's a richer, darker timbre, I'd say, than some other male groups. You'll find a lot of our other competitors, if you will, are very middle heavy. There are tenors in the middle and maybe a lighter bass and a lighter top, but we have a fabulous foundation in Craig's bass, and Chris adds on top of that with a nice baritone, and then we have the tenor who is able to go both high and low, and then I work where I can above.
Now, the tenor's the new guy.
Yeah.
You just joined the group a year ago, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, and you have a really interesting background. You also write extensively about the Middle East and have dual degrees, or is that?
That's
I've got the wrong guy here.
That's
right. Okay. That's Chris.
I actually have a 4 years enlistment in the Air Force, so that's, I think, pretty unique. I was part of the U.S. Air Force Band singing sergeants from 2001 to 2005. Stationed at Bowling Air Force Base in Washington, D.C.
So I definitely want to get that story out of Chris, but first I've got a question for you
sure.
that I asked you before we started, and I want to make sure we cover it here, and that's this. I want both sides of this story. So you come into this group that's been established for a while, and they're recorded and everything like that. Now they've got a new voice,
mm-hmm.
And you have to be the new guy on the block as well. So how did you feel about it?
It was pretty intense for the first few months.
They yell at you a little?
I'm sorry?
Did they yell at you a little?
Yeah, a couple times. The complete set of pieces that we consider to sort of be in our rep and in rotation for concerts and recordings fills a 3.5-inch three-ring binder. It's hundreds and hundreds of songs. I didn't have to learn all of those at the beginning, of course, but there was a lot of homework on my part. We're all very good friends with the outgoing tenor. He chose another path professionally, which was fine. And
started his own recording label, I think.
Yes, yep. He does some producing. And so that is to say that there wasn't any kind of bad blood with me coming in. But at the same time, it was a lot of work for me to learn all the music that I had to. I was coming into a group that had been performing together for quite a while.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So now to the other side of the coin. How was it for the three of you when this new kid came in off the street, out of the Air Force?
Steve was a known quantity because we had worked with him in other capacities and other groups. So we were confident in his music making. I think the biggest challenge in a group like ours is it's very much a marriage. I mean, we spend a lot of time together,
You're on the road.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah.
And so there's a real delicate balance with personalities and politics. And so that's not to say that we didn't have confidence in Steve, but you never know if things are going to click until they do or don't. And we're happy to report that they don't. It's just really terrible.
You guys are going to leave him as Juno, right?
I'm out of here. Yeah.
No. It's really, we are.
Hey, we can find your work in town, I'm sure.
Great. I mean, it's been a real joy this past year. We've really hit a wonderful stride. It's great to bring new ideas into the group and a new personality into the mix, and it's been really exciting. So we're very happy with Steve.
Well, now, in our last few minutes, Chris, as a world-famous author on the Middle East and a consultant, how do you find time to sing with this group?
Well, what these guys don't know that I'm actually going to reveal right now is we're actually in Alaska on an intelligence reconnaissance mission.
Ah.
a double agent.
My resume, it points to various impressive type of things, but in reality, all I do now is make music. I left that career behind me. I lived in the Middle East for a while and worked for various capacities in business and government. And I left that behind and am happily making music.
Well, the concert is tonight. You're playing at the Jack, right?
Thunder Mountain.
Oh, you're Thunder Mountain. Oh, nice acoustics over there. You're gonna. Have you been over there?
Yes, this morning we sang for some of the school children.
Nice sound, right?
Yeah.
What time?
7 p.m.
7 p.m. Okay, so 7 p.m. Thunder Mountain High in the big new auditorium and like that. Guys, let's go out with a little bit more of your music.
Great.
If you can identify this in one note, then you can tell me what I've got here. Nothing at all.
It's John Cage.
John Cage.
Yeah. And it is?
This is Speciosa Facta S by John Dunstable.
Well, we will go out with this. Thank you. 7 o'clock tonight, TMHS. Listen to the crowd. The music tells you that we're in another one of our sustainability segments, and we've got lots of things that we're going to talk about today. My guests for the show are actually not people. The guests that we're going to be talking to today are people who are not here. They're actually behind the World Wide Web, and what we're talking about is a set of websites that are accessible to us here in Juneau that will allow us to find out what to do with various things that we want to dispose of and would like to keep them not going into the landfill. The landfill in Juneau is basically right in the middle of town, and our ability to minimize things that go into that landfill, everything that we can avoid putting in there is going to keep the thing from growing anymore. In addition, there's a lot of stuff in the average household that probably should not be just tossed out the door and like that. So the first of these sites that I have already had a little bit of information, last week we talked to Jim Panora on the show, and he told us about this website and some of the things that are on it. But Jim maintains a website under the Public Works Department heading on the Internet, and so you get to this one by going to www.juneau.org. And then behind that, you add, or you can follow tabs to get to this once you get on the main site. But what you're looking for is the rec.php. So with the full address is www.juno.org/pubworks/r-rec.php. And I don't have a direct, you can't bring this one up easily on Googling. You kind of have to go in through the site. But the site is really excellent once you get out here, because for each item that's on the site, basically the site tells you who it is in Juno that deals with that. So, for instance, the first heading on the site is antifreeze. If you change the antifreeze in your car, or if you have some antifreeze that you need to get rid of, there is actually a company here in town, Southeast Antifreeze Recyclers Incorporated, and they will take the antifreeze from you. I'm not sure if they charge for the service or not. And then the rest of the items are what to do with an appliance, like a refrigerator or something like that, how to deal with car batteries, how to deal with household batteries, brown paper bags. If you have brown paper bags, you can either take them to the grocery store and use them to get your own produce, or you can donate them. St. Vincent de Paul, the Salvation Army, and Rainbow Foods, all three take them as well, and you can take them to the recycle center as paper. They'll also pick them up in the mixed, the blue top curbside recycling bins as well. You can get rid of a cell phone by taking it to the Aware Shelter. They're at 586-6623, so if you have a cell phone that you want to get rid of, what they do is they send them to soldiers. So they box them up periodically and send them overseas. Computers are a problem, and we talked about this with Jim last week. The only computers that are readily accepted are Apple Macintosh. However, I think Kapler's computers may be interested. I'm not sure if they're still taking computers, and they do not take the older monitors, only flat screens. So you might contact Kapler and see if they're doing that. Of course, eyeglasses, we've always known, are accepted by the Lions Club. You can get rid of old fishing line by taking it to Western Auto, and they'll dispose of it for you. Juno Recycling Center takes glass. You cannot put glass in the blue-topped containers. Hangers and plastic garment bags you can take back to any dry cleaner. Hazardous waste is collected once in a while. The next collection is on October 14th. These are the drive-through collections where they rearrange the roads over by Costco, and you can take various things like paint and oil. There are some limits, and you need to go out on the website and see what they have to do. Two things in particular. One is if you take a paint can, you have to allow the paint in it to dry completely. So you need to open the thing up and let it completely dry before you take it down there, and then you can actually take that to the recycle center and toss it in, but you can take it to the hazardous waste event as well. If you have metals, there are several things you can do, and we'll be looking at one of those in detail in a few moments. But metals can be gotten kept out of the landfill by taking them to the Capital Waste Management. They collect them separately. However, they do charge you for that. You can also take them for free to Skookum Recycling, and we're going to look at Skookum Recycling's page because they have some specific things that that are extremely helpful if you're trying to keep from putting things in the landfill. If you have phone books or books, you can take them to the recycling center. You can also take the books to the wonderful Friends of the Library shop over in the Valley. However, there are some limitations as to what they'll accept. So if they are old textbooks, for instance, they won't accept those, and there's other things. So they have a list on the door to the room where you turn the things in, and if you sort through your stuff and give them what they will take, then you can take the rest to the recycle center. You cannot put books in the blue-topped containers, however. Plastic bags. Most of the grocery stores will give you a slight discount for doing them. I know Fred Meyer does particularly. There are also bins at A&P Grocery, and Fred Meyer will A&P no longer, but at Fred Meyer and the Salvation Army and the recycling center has a bin inside the recycling center door where you can put plastic bags from the supermarket. If you have six-pack rings, you can take them to Juno Wholesale and they'll take them. Printer, toner. There's a couple of places in town that buy printer and toner, and I understand the new Office Max has a program. You have to enroll in a special program, but then you can take printer, toner, and ink cartridges to the place out in the Valley. the shipping materials, this is an ongoing problem. If you get a box that has a whole bunch of peanuts or something like that in it, they will actually take those, I'm told, at Taku Graphics near Lemon Creek. And Amy Kale will take bubble wrap. Annie Kale will take bubble wrap. And some of the stores and art galleries that mail items are looking for those sorts of things. For a charge, Les Schwab will take care of your old tires, even if you don't buy new ones from them. You can get rid of used cooking oil at the Baranoff Hotel. And the vehicles, the borough is no longer sponsoring the vehicle disposal things, primarily because Skookum Recycling is now taking vehicles. If you don't want to drain the vehicle and pull the tires off of it, then Skookum will not pay you for it. But if you do remove the tires and drain the fluids, then Skookum will pay you $25 for the car if you take it over there before they put it through their crusher. And finally, on the CBJ website, you can get rid of waste oil. 5 gallons of waste oil per month are accepted at the household hazardous waste programs. So now I want to turn to Skookum Recycling. Let me pull the website up here. So Skookum Recycling is a private firm. They collect a lot of different things. In particular, they purchase some metals. They'll take almost any piece of metal that you have. When you drive into the Skookum yard, you'll see piles of heavy metal and light metal. Basically, the heavier things, anything thick and fairly hefty, goes on one side and on the other. But there's a yard manager there who will show you where to take what you have. And then the biggest thing that you can get rid of at Skookum Recycling is junk vehicles. They will also take appliances, but they cannot have any fluids in them at all. So if you have a refrigerator to get rid of and it still has refrigerant in it, then Skookum will not accept it. As a matter of fact, they won't accept anything that has fluids in it, except they will take cars. Again, they don't pay you, and they do have the ability to be able to drain your gas tank and your oil and all of that sort of stuff. But you can get $25 if you're willing to drain the thing out before you take it in there. So Skookum is not a bad place to deal with. They're located right off the road as you're going into Costco. Instead of turning right at the curve there that goes around to Costco, you just go across to the left and down. And they're open Monday through Saturday. Closed on Sundays. I think they have different hours in the winter, which I believe they'll shift over in a month or so. And Skookum is one of the places that you can get rid of large metal objects and like that. And if you have wire or aluminum or brass or bronze or any of those kinds of metal, then you take them to the scale and they weigh them out, and you get a few bucks for doing that. Another kind of web page, but not really a web page so much, that I wanted to talk about is freecycle.org. A lot of people know about Freecycle now, but if you don't already know about it, it is an amazing operation. Freecycle is a national organization. There is a Juneau chapter, and the way you get to it is to Google the word Freecycle, F-R-E-E-C-Y-C-L-E. And once you have Googled out to Freecycle, then the website will guide you to a registration process. And once you register on the Freecycle webpage, then can post. And this is an email operation. What will happen once you've registered is that emails will start dropping into your email from Freecyclers around Juneau who are putting something up. The only rule about Freecycle is you can't charge for anything on there, but it's a wonderful way to clean out your garage. If you have objects around the house that you look at and you think, I can't take that to the dump because I mean, it's still got use in it, but it's not mine anymore. It's somebody else's. You can get connected up with that somebody else using the Freecycle facility. So what you do is you go out on Freecycle and you either post an offered or you post a wanted, and then after you've either gotten given the thing that you were looking for or someone has come and picked up yours, then you post a taken so that everybody knows that they can quit dropping emails on you. You can take this as a as individual emails that drop into your email throughout the day, or you can also take it as a digest. So if you don't want to read all of the stuff, but if you're looking for something in particular, you want to be right on top of it because things go really fast. Usually the first person who calls within minutes after a posting if they're really interested in the thing. So far, I haven't seen any limit on things that can be put on FreeCycle. There may be some things that they won't accept. The list is moderated. And so the moderators, when you put a post up, it will tell you that the moderators have to look at it before you can do it. And if you attempt to put something up that is not doesn't conform with whatever rules are on the FreeCycle site, then you'll get a nice little note from the moderator saying that he couldn't accept your post and explaining why. So three good sites to know about. The first one is www.juno.org/pubworks/rec, which is a listing of all of the thing, all the places in town that you can get rid of various things without putting them in the landfill. Second organization we talked about today is Skookum Recycling. There are other organizations around town that are doing recycling activities, and we'll try to cover those as we move on through this. And finally, encourage everyone to become a subscriber to FreeCycle so that we can keep these things out of the landfill and make Juno a better place to be without the Mount Trashmore climbing any higher than it is. About 28 minutes before 4 o'clock, you're in tune with KTOO News. We're in the middle of Juno afternoon. My next guest is Marcia Bennett. She's here to tell us about a program that's run through NAMI called the Family to Family Education Program. Hi, Marcia.
Hi there.
So tell us about this program. You just finished a thing in September for teachers of this program, right?
We did.
And now you've come, now there's one for the general public, right?
Right. There are two family-to-family classes that are held now in Juno. One is in the spring and one is in the fall. The fall class starts next Monday, and it's being held at the Family Birth Center in the library from 6 until 8 o'clock. And that's the first of 10 weeks of class for 2 hours each. And we're assuming that people will eat their dinner and come and have a snack with us while we talk about stuff.
Good. And what kind of stuff are you going to talk about?
Well, I'm going to just read for a second from the poster that you may have seen around town or have been delivered into your email box. It says, the Family to Family Education Program is teaching the knowledge and skills family members need to gain insight into how mental illness affects your relative, understand their subjective lived experience, learn how to advocate for better treatment options, explore the neurobiology of brain disorders, learn from and with others about your own struggles and the struggles of others, learn the latest on medication and treatment options, and learn to cope with worry and stress and focus on self-care. One of the things that's unique about the Family to Family Education Program, which is a national program sponsored by NAMI National, is that it has been proven to be an effective program that actually improves the lives of the people who take it. And that's been on a long-term process of investigation and research. So we're one of many. The teachers are experienced as family members of people with mental illness, and we're not the experts. We're not going to come in and talk to you as as a psychiatrist or psychologist would. We're going to come in and talk about our own struggles and how we've coped with them. And we're going to talk, hopefully, bring out discussions on a fairly regular basis to help each other help other people. And hopefully, in each class, we get a variety of mental illnesses that are being discussed. And we talk about local resources and medications that are prescribed and other methods of counseling, and we get to the place where we're really advocating for our relative. Hopefully, people won't be in crisis mode when they're in our class. We have support groups which are really effective for someone who's in the midst of crisis and doesn't really want to read material, because we have a lot of material to read. But we also assume that we'll have more discussion in the meeting, and after you go home, you'll have material to read. So we won't be necessarily reading the whole thing in the classroom itself.
Now, so this is a longer sequence than just like one meeting.
It's 10 weeks.
10 weeks, okay. And so it meets one night a week for 10 weeks?
Monday nights from 6 until 8.
Okay, and then there's a reading assignment probably given out each week. So there's some commitment on the part of the people who sign up for this to work their way through the material.
That's right. It is a fairly big commitment, but the end result is a lot of healing and a lot of understanding of what they're dealing with and sharing with other people who are dealing with similar issues.
This is almost like the Al-Anon program aimed toward people who are dealing with problems of mental illness.
Right. This is more of a class, though. Al-Anon and AA and other peer groups are more support groups, but there is a lot of reading material. It's all state-of-the-art. A lot of the things we're reading about with regard to the brain and medications are way ahead of a book being published. So it's really first-rate information that will really help you.
You've been doing these for a while, right? And so how many people would you estimate have gone through this kind of program in Juneau?
Well, it's been taught in Juneau for probably 7 or 8 years, maybe longer. I haven't been teaching that long, but with about 10 to 12 people each time, you're really reaching quite a number of people. Yeah. And the recent teacher training that we had a woman from Petersburg, and the hope that we would be able to go up into Haines and other local communities and spread the training so that those communities can have this course as well.
After someone goes through the 10-week program, is there a follow-up of any kind?
There can be. It depends on the group, actually. It's very problem-solving oriented, and a year or so ago, we did have a support group that wanted to meet and problem-solve some more around their own issue, and we carried that on for several months. It just depends on the class.
Mm-hmm. So there is some organicity to the way the class works. In other words, the class can kind of form, to some extent, its agenda.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Within the material.
It's very much of an interactive group effort to help each other.
Mm-hmm.
It can be a very effective program, and it depends on how many people stick with it for the 10 weeks, too. It's a commitment, and we hope that people that sign up will come regularly. People travel, so that's one thing that we assume, you're going to miss a class once in a while, but you'll have the material to catch up, and hopefully you won't miss more than one or two classes.
You may have already said this, but is there a cost for the program?
No, it's free.
Okay. And I guess the key question is, how does someone who feels that they want to undertake this class get into it?
Well, there's the NAMI office would like to register people. We also have an email. The phone number is 463-4251, and the email is NAMIJuno@gmail.com. And you can register either way. Since it's coming up Monday, we have a quite a few who are already registered, but we have enough room for a few more. And if you aren't able to reach the NAMI phone number or email, you can come on Monday and we'll register you at that time.
And once again, the meetings are being held at?
The Family Birth Center.
Okay.
Above the hospital.
Okay. Okay, so above the hospital Family Birth Center, first meeting is, should have
Monday,
written,
Monday night.
Okay, so before Monday night, if you want to register, you need to contact NAMI. However, if you don't manage to get around to that, there may be room in the class. Come around to the Family Birth Center on Monday evening and take a check and see if you can get in. I think, is there more?
No, one thing we're going to spend a little bit of time on this time, the materials are available, and that is talking a little bit about PTSD. And we're trying to reach out to veterans and their families and other people who've had PTSD or are experiencing in a family situation. So if there's anyone out there that would like to attend on the basis of that module, it'll be incorporated into the overall course, but it'll probably occur about in the middle of the class.
Okay. Marcia, thank you so much for bringing us up to date on this program.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 9th of October, 2012. It's the birthday of Jill Kerr Conway, born in New South Wales, Australia, 1934. Father was a sheep rancher. She grew up in isolation on a sheep ranch, far, far from town. She became a sheep hand on the ranch, checking fences and prodding sheep from one paddock to another. Went off to college, studied history, and then spent 10 years as the president of Smith College, first woman to hold that position. She's the author of The Road from Kurrain and A Woman's Education. Jill Kerr Conway, who said, "You never know what you'll want to write until it starts writing itself in your head." It was on this day the Washington Monument was opened to the public. It had been 40 years in the building from 1848, opened on this day 1888. At the time, 550 feet high, it was the tallest building in the world. It's the birthday of James Howe McClure, born 1939, Johannesburg, South Africa, a journalist and a crime novelist. He wrote a series of crime novels in the Kramer and Zondi series set in South Africa, two detectives, one Afrikaner and one Zulu, and then wrote a couple of nonfiction books about police in Liverpool and police in San Diego. James Howe McClure, who said, "I long, long, long ago thought the finest thing to be is an entertainer, with tons of funny things to say. If people find lots more in my work, that's great. But if they just read and have a good laugh, that's fine for me." It's the birthday of the Irish poet Sharon Carson, 1948, in Belfast. Still lives there. His parents only spoke Irish at home, and the Carson children learned English playing in the streets with other children. Author of many books, including Belfast Confetti and Shamrock Tea. Sharon Carson, who said, "There's a whole language out there, and one's role as a writer is to stumble around in it." And it's the birthday of the composer Camille Saint-Saëns, born in Paris, 1835. Wrote 13 operas, of which the most famous, really the only one much performed, was Samson and Delilah. Toured frequently, playing his piano concertos all over Europe and the United States, accompanied by a servant and his pet dogs. Saint-Saëns, who said, "I like good company, but I like hard work even better." Here's a poem for today by Sharon Olds entitled Parents' Day. "I breathed shallow as I looked for her in the crowd of oncoming parents. I strained forward like a gaze hound held back on a leash. Then I raced toward her. I remember her being much bigger than I, her smile of the highest wattage, a little stiff, sparkling with consciousness of her prettiness. I pitied the other girls for having mothers who looked like mothers, who did not blush. Sometimes She would have braids around her head like a goddess or an advertisement for California raisins. I worshipped her cleanliness, her transfixing irises. Sometimes I thought she could sense a few genes of hers dotted here and there in my body, like bits of undissolved sugar in a recipe that did not quite work out. For years, when I thought of her, I thought of the long souring of her life, but on Parents' Day, my heart would bang and my lungs swell so I could feel the tucks and puckers of embroidered smocking on my chest press into my ribs, my washboard front vibrate like scraped tin, to see that woman arriving and to know she was mine. Parents' Day by Sharon Olds from The Wellspring, published by Knopf and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by Reputation.com, a service for managing businesses' online image by working to improve how they look in search engines and review sites. Reputation.com. Written by Joy Biles, produced by Nick Vetter. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's just coming up on 14 minutes before 4 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News, and the people that I have in the studio now, are three of them are not who they are, so that'll give you a surprise. With me at the moment are Teddy Brewster, Martha Brewster, and Elaine Harper, along with Kristen Garreau. And in actuality, those first three have different names, but we'll let them explain. So why are you Teddy Brewster, Martha Brewster, and Elaine Harper?
Because that is the role that Ms. Garreau assigned to us, and the role she thought we best would fit, and she did good on her selections.
These young ladies are part of the cast of Thunder Mountain High School's production of Arsenic and Old Lace, directed by Kristen Garreau, and they are actually Marie Peterson, whom you just heard, Kristen Dutson, and Savannah Carroll. So how does it feel to be someone else?
I like doing it. Because
this is Kristen.
It's fun to like just not be yourself for a little while and like try to be a different character.
So how is it playing an old lady?
I just like it. It's fun to be old.
Who did the makeup?
We do our own.
Do you?
Yeah.
We did get a little lesson from Bo Anderson, who does he's the auditory manager downtown at JDHS, and Bo came and did a little lesson on old people makeup and helping them look like old ladies. And
this is Kristen Garreau, the eminent director of the play and drama teacher at TNHS.
And Bo did a great job, and the folks who have to look like they're old have done a really good job with their makeup, and they look like old ladies out there.
So, Savannah, you're playing a different, not a member of the group, as it were. How does your role play into there?
I'm the minister's daughter as well as Mortimer's fiance.
So you get to play a younger person?
Yeah.
No, closer to your own age.
Mm-hmm.
So when they first put the makeup on, you've done this thing a couple of times on stage now. When they first put the makeup on, what did you think?
Oh, okay, honestly, it was kind of hard to take them seriously. Seeing so close to their faces and seeing the makeup, it was very fascinating.
Yeah, we would be like running a scene, and we'd have to look at each other, and we'd just crack up.
How long did it take you to get them over that, Kristen?
Not too long. They did it maybe, we had a dress rehearsal, and they put all their costumes and, you know, the wigs on and everything for the first time, and it really just sort of transformed them. And after that, everyone kind of got through those jitters that first dress rehearsal. And then after that, it was just the old ladies who came out.
Did you change your voice?
Yeah, I do have to make it quite deeper, and I have to wear a prosthetic mustache. So, and it smells like an open Sharpie under my nose all the time. So it is quite different.
Uh-huh.
And it's hard to recognize that it's me up there, partly because I have to drop my voice low.
That's Marie, and she's playing a nephew of the Brewster sisters.
The insane.
The insane nephew who thinks he's Teddy Roosevelt. So.
Lay the nephew on us.
Yeah.
Teddy is...
No, your voice.
Oh.
Um.
no, you cannot do that.
Ah, okay.
No, I don't.
So, do you age your voice?
A little bit.
Can we hear it?
Well, I don't really age it. I just talk more, I just enunciate more, I guess.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you don't put a quaver in it or anything?
Not really.
No. So I think I've seen the two of you in plays before, right?
Yes.
This is not your first shot out on the stage.
Yeah.
Have you been out before at TMHN? Oh,
mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. So all three of you are veteran actresses.
Yeah.
Yes.
So is there a career here?
In acting?
Bhakti Abha, my dear.
Yes. For me, there has been, and I could plan on continuing doing acting and music-wise. I can't speak for the others, of course. Uh-huh. What about you guys?
Yeah, what about you guys?
I plan on continuing.
Drama school? Anything like that?
Maybe. I'll see. I'm still figuring that out.
Yeah. Would you advise it?
I think it would be great, even if they don't go into studying the theater, but just participating in community theater, and there's lots of venues for acting as they grow up, and I think everyone so far that we've worked with in this play has really taken on those roles and really energized by it, and I could see all of them kind of having fun with that in their future lives in some way.
Anybody here go through the STAR program that they run out at the university for high school students?
No, but we have had some. We do have a few people who have in the cast who participated in STAR.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there any coordination between you and Perseverance?
Not on this production, no.
But that, there sometimes is.
There sometimes is. Mm-hmm.
That's really a wonderful resource to have in town.
Definitely, for sure.
There was a really interesting talk up at the university last Friday where Kyle Pickett and Art Roach and, Linda Rosenthal.
Yep.
All got up on the stage and basically had a conversation about arts in a small town. And this town is amazing for the range of art that we have per capita. It's just like, you know.
It is, and then it's nice that we use each other as resources. Like here at Thunder Mountain High School, we have this great new facility, but we don't have years and years and years of costumes that have built up for our use. So we borrow from JDHS, who's really welcoming to us and opening that door, or props, or helping with the set. So a lot of different arts groups have really helped us out in a lot of different ways, which is great.
How did the rest of the students at TMHA's react? Are your peers conscious of the fact that you're in a play?
I've had people actually just today come up to me and be like, hey, really good in that play.
They saw it over the last weekend.
Yeah, over the weekend.
Yeah, they're very supporting. They come out and watch you, and they'll tease you about it later, like on some parts. Like for me, it's been like, oh, you get to play a dude, ha 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 ha. But Thunder Mountain is very supportive in the arts and of each other, and I really appreciate that. And most of the school is either going to come see it or has seen it, so that's the amazing part.
Same way for you at Savannah?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the support level from the rest of the school.
Mm-hmm. I've heard people talking about it, so and saying that it was good. So, yeah.
So are you doing another play this year, or
we will do another play in the spring? We'll do The Wizard of Oz. That will be our musical, and so that'll be really fun to get people into that production and get people seeing that production. So that'll be happening in April.
Well, a thing to look forward to.
Yes.
But right now, there's a thing to look forward to. When's your next performance?
Thursday.
Thursday, okay. And then
7:30.
At TMHS on stage. By the way, I had New York Polyphony in here about 15 minutes ago, 20 minutes ago, and they were saying that they had performed for the school in the middle of the, or kind of on the set, and you guys have been part of their audience.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
So people can come Thursday night, Friday night, and Saturday night is our last performance at 7:30, each night at 7:30.
So we have three shots at 7:30, Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night, to see Marie Peterson play Teddy Brewster with a mustache. Kristen Dotson play Martha Brewster, one of the ladies who prepares the elderberry wine. Okay, and Savannah Carroll playing Elaine Harper, the daughter of the minister, all directed on stage by Kristen Garreau at TMHS. Step out and see this theatrical performance. Thanks, folks.
is bird note. Few songbirds are more familiar across North America than the chipping sparrow. Petite and rufous-capped, chipping sparrows breed over much of the continent. They winter in the southern U.S. and Central America. Yet familiar as the birds may seem, scientists are still unlocking their secrets. Recent research shows that when baby male chipping sparrows beg for food, their first begging calls already show a connection with the songs they will develop. Soon, the young male's begging calls mix into what is known as subsong, a sort of infant babbling for young male birds. And very quickly, subsong begins to transition to imitations of adult songs. By the time a young male chipping sparrow migrates south in early October, it has developed 5 to 7 precursor songs, works in progress, but closer to adult songs. Next spring, when the young male returns north for its first breeding season, it will settle in near an older male. Soon it drops all but one of the precursor songs, the one most like the older male's song, and in a few days nearly matches its neighbor note for note. Then for the real test of its new song, attracting its first mate. We're glad you listened to Bird Note. Learn more about how you can help keep the show aloft and singing on our website, birdnote.org. I'm Mary McCann.
Tracy Spring singing in the background there. She's doing a concert at Resurrection Lutheran Church Saturday, October 13th, 7:30 p.m. Tomorrow, Cheryl Levitt-Snyder will be hosting the program. She'll talk to Wayne Stevens about United Way. Sally Smith will drop in to highlight the upcoming Holiday Pops concert. Details about Saturday's community garage sale. James Wyckoff will be back. And Sarah Lynn Tavachnik from Aware will be here to talk about their capital campaign. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. And KTOO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Auk Bay, tune to K276AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201AM at 88.1. K220BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, you can hear KTOO on K210AS at 89.9. And in Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau, digital channel 871. KRNN is on digital channel 872. And KXLL is on channel 873. And we stream continuously at www.ktoo.org.